Hello, nerds, and welcome to the Engadget podcast. This is episode 37, Modern Things. I am your host, Terrence O'Brien, and I am joined this week by Evan Rogers.
Hello.
And Chris Velasco.
Hey.
How you guys doing?
I don't understand the musical reference that is the title of this episode. Can you explain it to me?
It is a Bjork song. It is off of the album Post.
Okay, good to know. File that away under things that I will never need to know about again.
Do you get most of the musical references for the titles of the show?
I think one of them was Intergalactic. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a Beastie Boys thing.
That was.
I heard that song when I was in third grade.
That came out when you were in third grade?
97, right?
I thought that was just like a machine learning, like word tumbler.
You thought it was just like magnetic poetry, just
yes.
Naming all of these.
Nope. You generated a word cloud and just like picked out the second biggest one.
Nope, these are all song titles. There is a playlist of all of the titles.
Wow, that's
on
cool.
Spotify.
That's
which,
a good thought.
I've been failing to update for the last several weeks. I should probably do that, and we should just start embedding it in the posts.
Yes.
So yeah, I don't know. Oh, and that's a thing that I think I should definitely do. So a little bit of housekeeping up front. Mm-hmm. That will probably replace the YouTube embeds in our podcast post going forward, because I do believe this is going to be the last one we shoot on video.
Okay.
Wait, what? Say it ain't so, last video podcast.
I know. So now you can do your radio voice and feel a little bit less weird about it?
No.
No?
No. I will never not feel weird about that.
I feel like if you don't have a camera in your face, it's much easier to just talk like this and put on a really exaggerated voice for
yeah,
everybody.
But I kind of do that anyway.
Well, do you want to tell people why we're moving to audio only?
So we're moving to audio only for a number of different reasons. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a video podcast is very resource intensive.
Yep.
It requires editing. It requires planning to like book a studio and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Audio, though, is a lot more flexible.
Yeah.
Which means we can bring people on the show from the West Coast. We have a whole bunch of editors
right.
out on the West Coast who have just never appeared on the show. It'll make it easier for us to bring guests in and do interviews and stuff like that, which we're really excited about. That was sort of like the initial vision when we relaunched this
right.
show.
Right.
And so we're taking some steps to really get back to that idea.
Yeah.
And you know,
we just need to be able to spit fire.
Yeah.
Like whenever we need to.
And that's sort of the thing. I think, you know, being able to work around other people's schedules is very important if you want to get people on the show.
Yeah.
They can, instead of having...
That's true. People don't know that. It's actually very hard to get guests on podcasts.
Yes.
Because they're busy, usually. If they're important, it's even harder.
Yeah. I've extended a number of invitations to people who have unfortunately had to decline because of the timing of the recording. So we shoot this at 10 a.m. on a Thursday morning, which is not super convenient for
get
people
on in
who
here,
have jobs.
Guys.
So, you know, that's going to allow us to do some different things and be a little bit more flexible. So the show's gonna evolve. There will be no more video, but you will still find us in iTunes,
yeah.
and Stitcher, and Pocket Casts, and Google Play, and whatever other place you get podcasts from.
Yeah, there's so many.
There's so many.
But it's however you like it. So there you go.
Yeah,
Terrence, I have some news to drop on you with regard to all of this stuff. So I don't know if this has been made clear to you yet, but we're ending the video podcast so that Devinder and I can have our own tech review talk show in the Huffington Post bed studio down the
wow.
hall, and we're calling it Tech in Bed with V&D.
Yeah.
So you can look forward to that starting never, because that's an awful idea.
I'm pretty sure we've pitched that before.
I had a better title the last time I pitched this, and I could not for the life of me remember what it was.
That the changes to the podcast also go along with some changes that are going on at the website more broadly that I just quickly wanted to address before we get to like the real heart of the tech news stuff. If you've checked the site, you may have seen there is a letter from our new editor-in-chief, Chris Trout, talking about kind of the future of the site and tweaking some of the way we approach things. Do not expect like super dramatic changes necessarily. We're not like going back to 2006. Super gear heavy stuff, but we are going to kind of try and refocus a little bit and get really back to the stuff that we do best, which is really lots of tech, looking at the future and how tech impacts that, and maybe pulling back a little bit on some of the periphery stuff. We have, to be fair, done a lot of politics this last year for very obvious reasons.
I mean,
we're not going to stop doing politics,
right.
But, you know, expect perhaps a little bit less of that or a little bit more.
We're showing our work. You guys should visit the website,
yeah.
look at the post that we put up, and let us know you know, let us know how you feel about it. But we're pretty open about exactly the changes that are being made to the site. And, yeah, I mean, like, it's going to be cool.
Yeah, I think it's all good stuff. And if you go, I won't bore people by talking too much about the internal working stuff, but there's some changes to the masthead and stuff, too, that I think kind of lay out the direction we're heading, and those are worth looking
at.
And,
totally.
You know, giving congrats to people like James True and Dana Woolman. And
James
Aaron
True! Also Dana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
also Matt.
Oh, Matt.
Also
and,
Matt.
And Nate.
Yes.
And Billy Steele and Richard Lawler. There's a whole bunch of
okay,
whole
so here's,
stuff.
Yeah, here's the
everyone
thing.
Everyone got promoted.
If you don't know all the names of the awesome people who work at our website, go to the masthead right now.
Yeah. Go follow everybody.
Don't stop the podcast, but open up an additional tab on your phone and just go look at all the cool people that work at our amazing internet website.
Yeah, and follow them on their social media channels.
Follow them on social.
Go tell them how much you love them. Because
but in a nice, in like a not weird way.
Not a creepy way.
Yeah, but you still should, though.
Yeah, just tell them they're great. Don't send photos of yourself outside their houses. Stop short of that.
Yeah, that seems fair.
Okay.
Anyway.
Do you guys want to get into the news now? Kind of.
Let's do it.
Get focused.
I don't know. I'm still stunned by this no video podcast thing. Like, where do we go from here? I'm a little shaken in my core.
What do I do with my hands?
Well, we're gonna go to
distract me with the news, please.
We're gonna talk about video. That's how we're gonna start.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So, I guess Sunday, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
It was Sunday. There was a little bit of a what's the word I'm looking for?
It was an event.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It was a thing that happened on the internet.
A thing that happened on the internet. Steve Stevens, a man from Cleveland who went and shot an elderly stranger in the head and killed him, and then later posted video of himself doing that on Facebook.
Yes.
And live streamed a confession to the crime.
That's right. That is the chronology. He posted a video, and then the live stream was of the confession. There were a few very early headlines that said that there was a live stream murder, which is not what happened.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, those things, to be fair, can get a little bit confusing. There's usually in the immediate fallout from these sorts of events.
We just want to be clear.
Yeah.
We just want to be clear on the chronology of what happened. But, you know, basically, this man kind of used all of Facebook's, like, most modern social tools to broadcast about the homicide that he committed.
Yeah. And so, I mean, part of the kind of controversy surrounded the fact that it took Facebook so long to remove the video as well. It took, I believe, almost 3 hours before they pulled the video down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so they said that nobody reported it initially, which I think is...
I find hard to believe.
I actually think that's totally plausible.
You do?
Well, yeah, because there's kind of that thing of like, well, surely someone else reported this. I don't need to report this, right? Like, it's like surely someone else like pulled the fire alarm type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I believe it. I actually believe that. The problem is that like once that happened, it's... it does take a long time. And also, like, obviously this story is tragic.
Yeah.
But I think it's gaining traction, at least in technology publication circles, because it kind of highlights all the ways that Facebook is cutting corners when it comes to the management of the content on its platform.
Yeah. And not to lay the blame entirely at Facebook's feet, although I do think that this does highlight a number of issues specifically at Facebook. It kind of also speaks to larger problems with social media and live streaming video in general.
Right.
This is not the first crime to be posted as a video on Facebook.
No.
Even if he had live streamed the murder, that would not be the first live streamed crime on Facebook.
Right.
And similar videos have ended up on Periscope, on Twitter, I'm sure YouTube as well.
I mean, LiveLeak has been around like forever.
Yeah.
You know. But I mean, like, this is the thing, is that like when Facebook hits a problem that needs to be solved by people, they really kind of shrivel. and look for an algorithmic way to do it. And I mean, like, in Edgar's piece, which you guys should go read, because first of all, you know, it's a very good and concise excuse me, look at exactly what happened in this case. So you should really, like, go and read it. But, like, when it comes to, like, the trending bar, mm-hmm. you know, instead of actually fixing the problem, they fired everyone and went with an algorithm. And then subsequently after that, the algorithm goofed up in a bunch of ways, which makes
started
sense.
Promoting a bunch of false news stories.
Yeah, a bunch of false news stories. And so, like, clearly Facebook has this recurring issue where, like, they just aren't willing to really throw in the human resources to do a lot of things. I mean, like, this is not the only aspect of it. Like, there's the policing, like, live videos. They say they have, like, a machine learning way of, like, looking at them and, like, screening for just, like, straight-up pornography. That's all well and good, but, like, you know, as someone who does social, like, and, you know, in past jobs have, like, created ads for Facebook, you get, once you have a couple of ads on Facebook, the next ad that you make gets approved, like, within minutes, mm-hmm. which means that there's no way that someone's doing, like, extreme diligence on the other end.
It's like once you've set at least a minimum bar, yeah. they're like, yeah, fine, whatever, you're good.
You're good.
I mean, it does kind of beg the question, though, like, what is Facebook's responsibility in all of this?
It's really tough to say. I mean, as pointed out in Edgar's post, which, again, is very good, you should go check it out, some people seem to think an entity like the FCC should be more involved in situations like this, sort of policing the content that we're making available on these sort of publicly available networks. And I don't necessarily buy that. The question I'm sort of trying to wrap my head around is, would an extra dose of transparency from Facebook in this particular situation help rehabilitate its image? Like, if they came out and said, this is what happened, this is our process.
This is the timeline. This is,
exactly. Yeah. Because, so, to your point earlier about no one reportedly reporting that video for right. several hours, what is the timeline from the first person who hits report
right.
to the first person on Facebook's side looking at it?
So, honestly,
and what happens from there?
I think that if they did publish something like that, mm-hmm. I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah.
You could, you know, the problem I think that they, I think the core of the issue is that people are like, Facebook, you just don't care about this. Like, you say that you care, but then in your actions, you don't reflect that, right? If they published some kind of timeline or had some kind of transparency about how their system actually worked, mm-hmm. I do think it would actually be like, listen, we got to this as fast as we humanly could.
Right.
You know?
And the issue that I'm seeing is that all of the attempts we've seen so far to cast light on how this process actually does work has come from journalists who have broken stories, which
yes.
is fine. And, like, credit to them. They're doing really good work. But, like, on some level, Facebook should be able to say, okay, well, you've read that story about how we have people in the Philippines monitoring stuff that goes up right. on Facebook for porn. Like, let's hear that from you. Let's hear some responsibility from you, the company that is not only making this kind of stuff possible, but on some level encouraging people to go live with their lives and not really thinking about the consequences that go with it.
Yeah.
I do think, though, like, the point you had just a second ago about the FCC getting involved, like, this is complicated,
yeah.
right? Like, as soon as you start talking about, like, you know, one of the things the parallels Edgar draws is to the 7-second delay on television, you know, and then any regulation in terms of, you know, what you have to do to monitor this kind of stuff, it will actually stifle innovation. Like, there are tons of video. I mean, like, Cabana just came out the other day, right?
I have no idea what that is.
Well, guys, well, it's Tumblr's new app that lets you watch YouTube videos mutually with, I think, 8 of your friends. It's either 6 or 8.
Hasn't this been done before?
It definitely has. I don't know with
mutual
eight.
Watching stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about with 8, but
it has. But anyway, so, like, if there was, like, a law in place that was mm-hmm. like, you have to have a delay on this, like, that app is just not possible. So yeah. It's like, it's a lot to consider before, you know, cases like these draw, you know, lend themselves to knee jerk reactions mm-hmm. by everyone.
Yeah.
Cause it's crazy what happened, but, you know, like, also it's very complicated.
Yeah, and back to this whole FCC thing, which just kind of fascinates me because with the new commissioner, Ajit Pai, very staunch conservative, he's a Republican dude,
right.
very smart, very funny, very young. He's going to be there for a really long time if he can help it. This guy has pushed for a rollback of some of the net neutrality stuff that we've seen pushed by President Obama in the sort of waning days of his administration. The issue with that and the parallels that I'm sort of kind of seeing now for the first time is yeah. broadcasters have the ability to put, in a lot of ways, whatever they want on their air, on public 100%. Air, funded by our taxpayer dollars. But they have standards and practices departments that they are beholden to.
That's right.
If we're no longer looking at the internet as this sort of publicly available, almost utility kind of service, this network, does that basically mean that there is no need for a standards and practices kind of body at organizations that make this kind of stuff possible? It's a witty question. I don't expect anyone to have an answer for it. It's just like...
No, it's just that is a question kind of at the heart of this, right? It's like who... Secondarily from the responsibility that Facebook obviously had and should obviously like own up to is the responsibility of like technology and broadcast companies outside of traditional broadcast. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I mean, and I think that's sort of the problem that people are starting, that we're kind of starting to face. And this is where a lot of people get tripped up. And what makes this such a complicated thing is so much of our consumption is moving not necessarily to social live streams, but to online video in general.
Yeah.
Which is regulated very differently, if at all, basically.
I mean, if you wanna put a video somewhere,
you can find a place.
You can do that on the internet. If you wanted to broadcast that video on live television, there are some hoops to jump through.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's sort of the question is, should there be hoops, period, to jump through for...
Great question, Terrence. I would say... Well, I'm not going to say anything, actually. Frankly, that's too big of a question to even, like,
way above our pay grade, you think?
For sure. I mean, like, as someone that does social all the time, I mean, like, no. There's so much great stuff that happens because people can just let their crazy minds go in this, like... ether of bullshit that we all do online. It's great. It's wonderful. And then there are also consequences to that freedom.
I don't know. I think there should be hoops, but I don't think the users are the ones who should have to jump through them. I think if I want to be able to stream, I don't know, this podcast or like a beautiful day outside in New York City, I should be able to do that. And if at some point there is something questionable that happens in it, it's now the onus of the platform owner to prevent that from making out to a larger audience. Exactly how that works, I have no idea.
Aside from
like hiring more people in the Philippines, scroll through your stuff.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what if you are just like, you know, you're just like some kind of like vlogging, like live vlogger. You're just like on, you're just like on Facebook Live. You're talking about all the brands that you really like, and then a disaster strikes or some kind of crime happens right next to you. Right. And you are broadcasting it. Like, technically, you're broadcasting a crime, a homicide, like something happening live.
Mm-hmm.
But because you're an outside entity, you know, you're essentially doing some kind of like citizen journalism. But effectively, it's still on the internet and live streaming.
Right.
So, like, what's the difference between those two things?
I think the difference is intent.
I mean, obviously, it's like one of them is a heinous evil thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And right. I think a lot of it does sort of boil down to intent, right? Like, and that's the thing that I don't know that an algorithm will ever really be able to recognize. Like, here is the situation, here is context, sort of part of that situation without being explicitly stated. How do you then take this piece of content, this video or whatever,
right,
and sort of frame it properly? Like, is this news or is this you being like a terrible, terrible asshole?
Right.
And I don't know. I think. For now, the best answer is probably just to throw more humans at it. But
Facebook really does not want to do that.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Which is why they've turned to countries like the Philippines in the first place. Like, right. You get they're English speaking, like they're sort of culturally aware of the West, and they realistically like don't cost a ton of money. Like, I don't know that that is sustainable, but I don't know that a purely algorithmic approach is the way to go either. At least for now. Like,
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We reach some kind of like. High-level sentient AI, like,
then it'll
yeah,
be
go
okay.
For it. Sure.
Yeah.
So I want to come back real quick to something you just said before, Chris, which is, you know, that there should be hoops to jump through, but the onus shouldn't be on the person generating the content. It should be on the platform,
right?
Primarily, just because I think that's like a pretty not revolutionary idea, but it's a dramatic shift from how we've traditionally treated platforms on the internet in general. You know, the argument has always been from primarily the biggest source of this has been file sharing platforms. Right. So like Napster, BitTorrent, they'd say, look, we provide a platform and what people do with it is not our responsibility. And, you know, we've all enjoyed the fruits of that labor, I'm sure, right, at some point. So, you know, putting the onus on Facebook all of a sudden, I think, to police what people do with their platform, not saying that it's right or wrong, but that does represent a dramatic shift in the way we've treated internet in general, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that in the sort of wild and woolly early days of the internet, you could kind of get away with anything, and if you made money along the way, like, great, enjoy it, sure, have a good time. But you have a company like Facebook or Twitter with Periscope, like, you've got these entities who's now, since they're public companies, they have fiduciary responsibilities to their shareholders. Like, it's a commercial space now. Like, I feel very strongly that the internet, as we know it now, is just like a fucking mall, which yeah, which frankly sucks. Like, you yeah, don't see, I mean, sure, we're more creative now than we used to be, and we have the ability to broadcast that to more people than we could,
yeah,
but you also have to contend with the fact that ads are going to be served against it. Basically, there is a money-making endeavor at every point of that experience. Yes. And the moment you surrender your content up to this platform, they're going to commercialize it.
Well, and that's the thing, is that, like, this so Facebook is, it's so complicated. It's so complicated because, like, Facebook is aping everything from Snapchat. Why? Because Snapchat is an authentic live platform.
But it's not for poor people.
But it's, okay. I have not actually followed that thread with Evan, so, like, I'm just leaving that one behind.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think that Facebook, a couple of years ago, Ben Thompson has written about this ad nauseum. Like, you should go read him if you want to, like, the real version of whatever this argument is. But basically, like, Facebook has an authenticity problem, and they've invested majorly in stories, you know, to mm-hmm, kind of bring people into their lives. You know, they've invested in Facebook Live, which, you know, again, is a really kind of authentic type of media form. But the Facebook brand is for everyone, which kind of is like Disney, where it's like, it's for everyone. Mm-hmm. It needs to be PG-13 or even more applicable. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they are very much at a crossroads in terms of, like, where their brand is versus, like, the actual hairiness of the internet.
And I wonder on some level if they can ever just look at what they've created at Facebook and realize, you know what, this brand, it serves its purpose. It's great for, like, moms and yeah, stuff. But for everything else, like, yo, guys, we've got Instagram. Like, we paid a ton of money for yes, Instagram, which has stories.
Yeah.
And people seem to be engaging with those stories more than they do on Snapchat anyway. Like, yeah, it feels like Instagram in some ways become A copycat factory, but B, on the flip side of that, sort of a skunk works where they're able to build,
yeah,
frankly, features that are similar to what you find on Facebook, but things that are guaranteed to get traction because Instagram is still, like, the buzzier, more important culturally platform.
It's also the lower barrier of entry platform.
Yeah.
Facebook requires a lot more effort, time. It's a much more complicated beast.
It also Man, just takes, I spend no effort on my Facebook.
I mean, I don't either, but I'm also not.
No,
like,
I think it has Facebook has a much higher cognitive load.
Yeah,
than
fair to
Instagram.
Say. Yeah,
there's a lot of
We could do, like, just Facebook talk for, like, an hour.
We probably could.
It's true, but what else are we working with right now, Terrence?
I think we should talk a little bit about phones.
Yeah, that's me. That's my thing. I'm a phone guy. Hey, what's up?
Is there a new phone?
No.
Oh,
there's no new phones?
My mistake.
There's nothing new under the sun, guys.
No. Sorry. It's been a really slow month.
Yeah.
I've definitely slept really well every night of this month.
Well, thanks mm-hmm, for listening, everyone.
All right. That's the Engadget Podcast. Now we've got to talk about the Galaxy S8, which we devoted an entire episode to like a week or two ago.
I think 2 weeks ago.
But units are out there. People have responded. Myself, all of our other sort of like review cohorts out there in like the tech journalism world, we've all got our thoughts. Arguably, they're all kind of the same thought, but hey, here we are.
And those thoughts are that it's a pretty dope phone.
It's a pretty damn good phone. I feel like this is something I definitely had trouble with while sort of putting together my review and my video. I think a lot of other people did too, is how enthusiastic can you be about this thing, which on the surface is very, 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 very good. But then also, so was the last one, that one blew up. Like, yeah, there's a level of, like, inherent skepticism that you have to kind of paint your review with.
That trepidation is
yeah,
real,
it's
dude.
It's very strange because, I mean, I'll say it very clearly right now. The Galaxy S8 and the S8 Plus are phenomenal phones. They're probably the best Android phones you can buy now until we see what Google comes out with the Pixel 2s. And if Apple whiffs this time, which is possible,
going
off of like the design leaks and what people have been reacting to about them,
right.
like there's a possibility that Samsung has produced the best phone of the year.
Right.
And we all know that, and we've all said that, but we're all still in the corner of our minds like, well, what if?
Oh, it just just sucked. Everyone was so – I had the Note 7, so I loved it.
Me too.
I was really
I literally
it.
when the recall notice went out, I framed mine, and Samsung got mad at me, so I had to take it out of the frame and send it back.
But I mean, yeah, but it's like, you know,
you could have just taken the battery out.
I have spoken about how cool the Note 7 is, and then, yeah, just like when – you kind of take, you know, when you give someone props and then they fail miserably, like it just sucks.
Like it's
but
not
this
even,
time around.
Yeah. It's not even a concern of like looking bad. It's just like, is it possible we could have missed something? And I don't think that anyone could have foreseen the Note 7 stuff happening, but you're going to see a lot of optimism tinged with a lot of skepticism.
Also,
now.
You can't reproduce that problem yourself.
Yeah.
Like you can't make the Note 7 explode.
No,
really.
It was just a thing that kind of happened.
Yeah. So, but this one, though...
hasn't exploded yet.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, and I think Samsung, like, delivered. That's the thing. It's like, there's still this specter, and this is not accidental, but, like, on the embargo day for the S8, lots of Apple leaks just happened to happen. You know, just randomly.
Just
not related in any
completely
way.
Coincidental.
Of course. But the thing is Samsung's phone is real, and there's a unit here in the room with us.
Yep.
And I'm not scared to have it in my pocket.
Right.
Which is a pretty big step, I think.
Yeah. So I think that's a step in the right direction.
Terrence, you're actually kind of a fan of this thing, which is odd because you hate non-stock Android devices.
I do. I loathe TouchWiz with every fiber of my being.
The Wiz, man.
And look, this is not to say that Samsung hasn't made nice devices in the past, but I've also not always necessarily been a huge fan of Samsung's sort of design language in general.
Yeah.
You know, when they did like the faux leather back thing, I was super not into that.
I kind of dig that.
Band-aid mode.
Galaxy S5 with that Band-aid?
Yep.
Oh.
Ugh.
Oh, and that bright electric blue, my God. So hype.
And what was the original Edge that had like just the one curved side?
Yep.
Which was dumb.
Which I think also might have had like a faux leather back.
I probably
that
did.
Was hype, though.
Galaxy Note Edge, yeah.
Yeah.
Like that was the moment you knew this
like,
was going to be a
thing. Ugly as hell, but also hype.
It was ugly as hell. And, you know, I've had a minor hang up. I shouldn't even say minor because it's actually one of the primary reasons I would never buy a Samsung phone. It seems like a minor thing to most people, but you agree with me, which is the placement of the buttons and the fact that until recently, Samsung has had physical or capacitive keys as opposed to touchscreen ones, and they insist on reversing the standard Android button order, which confuses the hell out of me. So just all of these things
it's
have
like crisscross. You got to wear your pants backwards.
All of these things have made me
that's
not
a fun
fan.
Deep cut.
It is. Guys, you want to know a secret?
Yeah.
One year I went as crisscross for Halloween.
How old are you?
Oh, God, I don't even know.
Eight?
Young.
Eight?
It's forgivable.
Yeah.
Whatever.
How does one actually get in the pants backwards? Like that can't be comfortable.
It was really rough.
Because you've got all the meat in the wrong place.
It was rough.
Okay.
We're getting off the rails,
guys.
But this thing is beautiful.
I am very curious to see what you think about TouchWiz, because I have noticed that Samsung has taken a design like, you know, like Galaxy S3 and 4, I think, were when I really started to, like, hate it.
TouchWiz, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, in the first iterations, Galaxy S1, Galaxy S2, like, Samsung was really actually trying hard to do a couple things. One, copy Apple.
Yes.
Fair, yeah.
Two, paper over all the really crappy aspects of very old Android. Like, the other day I actually revived my Nexus S.
Nice.
And, like, you know... people forget. I mean, people actually do forget. Like, Android was like a busted mess in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool because you could do whatever you wanted on it, and that was super awesome. But like,
but it
now,
was also fundamentally broken and super ugly.
Now there are design benchmarks that need to be reached, and like, you know, I think I actually like. Basically, what I'm saying is that I was a huge hater in the Galaxy like guest 3 S4 days because it was just really ugly, very stupid sounds all over the place. It was trying to be cute.
And it just wasn't. And it just
the sounds are still pretty bad.
It just like sucked. Like TouchWiz just sucked. And you're like, I need stock. This is so bad. Now they've muted the sounds. Like the design, I feel like someone that actually studied design as like their profession is now doing it. And
even if it's not my favorite, at least someone, it looks professional and polished.
Yes, exactly. What do you think? I mean, you're the one that's in it.
Like. I'm a big fan, to be honest. Like, I was very much in the same boat as you. Like, S3 and S4 were incredible physically, but the software design was just trash.
Yeah.
And then they came out with the 5, which I think, fair to say, was like a step back in terms of the way that the device itself was built. But you could kind of see them realizing, oh, wait, we've got a lot of shit going on here. Let's let's take this down. Let's crank it down a little bit. And every subsequent year, S6, S7, S8, they've continued to turn that dial down. And, like, there's another dial elsewhere that's just, like, elegance. So they're turning down the shit dial and turning up the elegance dial at the same time. And that's led us to where we are with the S8, which I think is, frankly, incredible. It's not perfect if you don't like strongly customized Android. Like, this just is not a device for you.
You just need to get a Pixel.
Yeah.
Right. But, I don't know, like, it feels mature in a way that TouchWiz never has felt before. That goes a long way for... like the pleasantness of everyday use.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll say this, it is, at least physically, software stuff aside, the best looking phone out there right now. Like,
for
this
sure.
thing is gorgeous.
I feel so bad for LG.
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought that up because I was just thinking, like, the LG also has a tall display, but the S8's display just, like, smokes LG's display. It does.
But it always does.
But. Now that the bezels are so small, like, you're right. It is actually not that far away, but, like, it's the integration and, like, the polish that makes you, like, you just, like, there's something so much more visually interesting about the S8 versus the LG.
Couldn't agree more.
And those rounded corners, man.
It's hot.
I'm not 100% sure if I'm, like, down. But
really?
But,
like,
sure.
So here's the thing is, I loathe, in general, the squircle thing. Like, it's just not for me.
Oh.
Like, just as a design choice, I'm not a fan.
I mean,
but
I like the squircle.
The consistency of the squircle icons on the kind of weird rounded corner squirkly screen,
I kind of
love. I kind of love it.
You fully turn the corner, man.
There's like,
I'm still not buying it, though.
Like, rounds, I don't know. Very many user interface elements are 90 degrees. Especially, like, with all the apps that exist right now. And, I don't know. I mean, it's cool, but it's like, I don't know. I don't think I actually care. And I think it might actually, like, make some apps look stupid.
I mean, it probably will. I mean, look, I'm 100% sure once I start, like, diving into apps and really, like, spending time with the phone, I will find inconsistencies in the design and stuff that are going to kind of drive me nuts.
But it looks hot.
But it does look, like, just purely aesthetically.
It looks desirable.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, like, Samsung, I think, kind of always has, like, ventured so close to, like, original desirability. And what I mean is like, not, like, copying iPhone and then, like, you have a desirable, like, there's the iPhone, then there's Samsung. And, like, maybe you want the iPhone, but, like, you want to also be able to, like, stream pirated stuff also. So, like, you need an Android for that. And, like, Samsung is a nice choice in that category. So, like, that's just, like, a very desirable object. And, like, I feel like since the S7, Samsung has really been, like, firing on that industrial design.
For sure. I got to ask, though, knowing what we now know about the S8 package as a whole, how do you guys feel that Bixby, just, like, you can't talk to it right now?
I mean, Bixby, from the moment it was announced, seemed fundamentally broken.
You think?
Oh, I absolutely never cared. I didn't even start to care.
And I think that's, I think most people, Evan, will fall into your category. Like, hey, here's the thing you can do. You can't do it yet. But it almost doesn't matter because everything else is so well done.
Yeah.
That, like, use Google Assistant if you really need to. Like, it's a non-issue for, like, 99% of the people going out to buy phones.
No, I mean, 100%. Like, the fact that the just, like, there is absolutely no fiber of my body that, like, actually makes that, like, a purchasing dependent decision. Like, they could have just not had Bixby at all.
Yeah, if they just
and
like,
I would
say,
still
hey, here's
buy
Google
the phone.
Assistant. Yeah, exactly.
And like the fact that it's not coming to all these markets has way more to do with like Samsung's like whole like business storm cloud than it actually has to do with like the real world.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I know. It's tough for me to reconcile because on one level, like, this is an incredibly polished, by almost every measure, incredibly good device. And I wonder if they like just messed up the expectations game. Like they pushed Bixby, they invited journalists to Korea to go like see it in person and do like deep dives to kind of build that hype to carry it through into launch. But at the same time, like the Bixby that we did get, which does not include the voice, you can't talk to it. Like the Bixby that we did get is of dubious value now anyway. Like
that's the thing.
Here's the home screen, awesome. Here's Vision that will not like identify our friend's shoes because they really want those shoes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Come on. This was what you were supposed to do. And if you'd gotten that part right, it'd be so much easier to forgive you for not giving us the one thing that people associate with virtual assistants.
Would you say that it's fair? Would you say that it's fair that Bixby falls into like the quote unquote innovation category?
I don't know what you mean by quote unquote innovation.
Well, I mean like innovation when, like so right actually, now, like I'm what I'm saying is basically that like the tech narrative is just savage as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Where like people are like looking at Apple and be like, what are you doing? Like what the hell is going on with you? And you know, like there's a question of like, can Apple innovate?
No.
To this day I don't know what that means. But I think that like Bixby is a similar thing for Samsung in that they're like, well, we need to be in like the AI assistant voice market too. What? It's really important, like from a business and branding standpoint. But I think in real life, people are like, if you never told them, if there was no commercials, if there was no in, like thing on the box that said Bixby, you just wouldn't even know.
So here's a weird kind of cynical question.
Yes,
the best kind.
Yeah.
Do they intend Bixby to be a success, or are they just saying we have to have a thing that we can like hype up and understand that nobody's going to use it anyway?
I feel like, I mean, Chris, you should answer this because you actually like know.
Well, so my understanding of Bixby is that it sort of debuts with the S8, but it will eventually kind of become the thread that winds its way through all of its connected products. So you'll eventually be able to use Bixby to, I don't know, like talk to your fridge and stuff like that. Like there is a connected option in just about every one of Samsung's consumer electronics categories. I mean, so it will be a thing. I think they count on that as important. I just don't know that they really are sold on how important it is on a phone.
Samsung, I mean, they also have like a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're building towards a connective ecosystem. And I think also it's very clear that Samsung is prepping for a world without Google. So like I don't think they care if Bixby succeeds right this second.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they care if the Samsung App Store succeeds right this second. I don't think that they care if, like, whatever the replacement for the Milk audio video thing is. But, like, they are putting together piece by piece integrated ecosystem of software services and hardware
mm-hmm.
that could eventually compete with Apple, could eventually compete with it. And I don't know what this nuclear option is for, like, when the relationship with Google gets so bad that they're like, yo, we're out! Open source Android, we're taking it from here.
Tizen!
But maybe. I mean, I think that they're just putting, they like have that card on the table now where it's like, oh, we've also got an assistant.
See, but that's where I kind of think that's where the cynicism for me comes in is I think it's purely a bargaining chip thing.
Oh, and you don't think they actually care about users like right this second? It's there.
I think they legitimately have little to no expectation of these things succeeding. Like, like you're talking about they have their own app store.
Yeah.
They've literally had their own app store for the better part of a decade now?
Yeah.
And nobody uses it.
Well,
who uses Milk?
Well,
do you use Milk?
I mean, Milk is not the same as an app store.
No, but I'm saying like they have all of these services and all of these things that they build on top of their platform that nobody uses. They know nobody uses.
I bought
uses.
Themes through the store before.
God, why? They're such trash, dude.
No, some of them are good.
The font choices are terrible.
But I mean, like,
sometimes they have, like, Nexus lookalikes, and I need that.
Samsung isn't dumb, though. Like, they're not a company run by idiots. Like, they know that these things are not going to take off. They're not sitting there going, you know what?
But we're very
Fuck
much
the Play Store.
We're very much in the U.S. market, though. Like,
that
there's
is true.
Lots of places where the Play Store just doesn't exist.
I think it's also fair to say that Samsung is sitting on enough money that it can afford to just be like, hey, let's like make a media play and see how that goes.
Well,
and if it works, great.
That's
sure.
what I'm thinking. That's that's what I can't help but feel is they built a thing, they put some investment into it, and it's primarily a media play that they know ultimately building like a fully fleshed virtual assistant is complicated and expensive, and people barely use their virtual assistants as is, because let's be honest, what do you ask Siri most of the time?
I don't ask Siri a goddamn thing.
What do you ask Google Assistant most of the time?
What time is it?
Yeah. It's set a timer, what's the weather? That's literally the only thing that I ever ask my phone for.
I mean, I'm at least casually interested in like some like smart home stuff.
I mean, I am.
I want voice, but I don't like care if it's a voice assistant. I basically need it to just be a voice interface to be like, turn on the lights. Turn on whatever else there is. It's not much more than lights, frankly. But... But I mean, like, why don't
turn on the coffee
machine? Chris, why don't you talk about exactly what is going? Because we kind of jumped in right away. But like, why don't you talk about what is going on with Bixby and like whether or not you think it has the potential to like become something?
I think it definitely does. I think Samsung very often is like, "Hey guys, we've got some money. Let's throw at a thing," and then we don't really care if it works or not. I think with two acquisitions, Samsung has kind of made its plans known. So it acquired SmartThings for a lot of money. It acquired Viv, sort of a voice interface company, also for a lot of money. And sure, these might not have cost a whole lot on the bottom line, all things considered, but I think it speaks to the importance that Samsung is now placed on having, as I've said, that sort of voice thread winding through all of its stuff. Mm. If it works on the phone now, great. If it doesn't, which, by the way, it doesn't, also fine. Like, we're figuring it out. And once we start to see Samsung voice interfaces and connected appliances and like TVs, once those are like the default option, Samsung is going to be laughing all the way to the bank. Like, their purchases will have paid off in a huge way for them.
Yes.
I don't think they frankly care at all if it's functional on the phone right now, because they've shipped it in the state that it's in, which does not work. but it's a foundational play, and I think it's as annoying as it is to have a thing that was promised to do one thing and doesn't really.
Also,
the game makes sense.
We were at the event. They like hyped it up. They were like, "You will be able to take pictures of anything in this world." Okay, they didn't actually say that, but
that was the implication.
They made a big deal about it, and they didn't have to actually do that, but they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bixby, someday maybe.
Yeah. God, I hope so.
I mean,
they
I
put
would
a
like
button
to see it
on the phone.
Yeah,
it's which, true.
By the way, like, I gotta tell you, the Bixby button doesn't do a damn thing. Like, you're supposed to be able to hit it so that your like Bixby home screen comes up, but the number of times I've been able to hit this thing once and have that work has been like 1 in 20.
I need
like,
to remap that button. Like, the fact that there is a button makes me stoked.
Can you remap it from the settings? No.
Samsung says
it works now.
Samsung says no, you can't.
Well, that's...
Well, I mean, what I want to say is like, I read this on XDA developers and don't have an SAE yet, so XDA tells me that technically you could, but Samsung has responded and said,
no, you can't.
Stop doing that. Which makes sense.
Yeah. So, we are running low on time, but there's so much more I want to talk about with the phone.
Yeah?
Let's do it. This is our last video episode. Let's go for it. Let's do a little bit.
So, well, we talked about the general design. We've talked about what a mess Bixby is.
Yeah.
What are the other kind of big things that we need to know?
Headphone jack.
Headphone jack with, by the way, those AKG earbuds.
Are they solid?
They're not bad.
Okay.
They're by far leagues ahead of any other pack-in earbud I've ever used. And, like, companies have cared about this stuff, too. Like, ZTE, when they did the original Axon Pro, gave you, like, a pretty decent set of JBL earbuds.
Yes.
Which I was super down with. This, frankly, is incredible.
Yeah.
I wish we saw, like, if you look at the spec sheet, it does have a DAC. It doesn't perform as well as like the quad DAC and the LGs did.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't get that in an LG now anyway, unless you buy a V20 from last year.
In watching all of the reviews, like a lot of, I don't know if people know what a DAC is.
Oh,
like a lot of reviewers are like, it doesn't have a DAC, but the amplifier is good. But I'm like, I think those are the same thing. Like, we're talking about like a chip. It turns the digital into analog, and somewhere along the line it needs to be amplified. But I would imagine that most of the time it's just in the same chip.
most likely.
So, yeah, all over the place. But anyway, so, like, did you like the sound? Like, did you like listening
to it? I
did.
I didn't have any problems with the Pack and earbuds. As I said, I think they're great. The speaker, like, the one speaker on the bottom of the phone isn't amazing. But
yeah,
when you've got one speaker driving stereo sound, like, come on. Yeah. Like, you kind of have to cut them slack.
Are there phones out there with good speakers?
There used to be.
Oh!
What up, HTC?
That's what I was going to say. It seemed like it was that one phone.
It really was. I think that's what the problem is that we had one phone that actually was like...
Well, yeah, one M7, one M8, M9 was okay.
Yeah.
10 didn't have stereo speakers. U-Ultra, I could not begin to tell you what's going on with that thing.
Okay, I was wrong. We had three phones with B speakers, but they were in the same line.
Right. Yeah.
But really, all other phones are pretty bad.
They're just
not that good. There's varying levels, but
right.
And I think the thing that people probably kind of learned from HTC's failure is that people don't care.
Well, here I would actually disagree. Like, so, I think that our audience is actually one of the audiences that actually really does care. There's, you know, if you travel in like hardcore r/Android. Circles or you know, some different circles on Twitter, or look at comments on YouTube, like, there is a cohort of people who really seriously cared about being able to, like, have really good audio come out of a phone.
Yeah.
And, like, personally, I do not listen to music out of my phone. But what I do listen to is podcasts. And, like,
right,
the old HTC phones and radio to a certain extent.
Mm.
The old HTC phones used to actually really be good at that, but that is... At this point, like, an outlier.
Yeah.
Like, we just had a line of HTC phones that happened to have great speakers, but everything else is, like, just okay.
Well, I mean, I think that's the thing. Is like, it's super niche, and, like, I listen to podcasts
yeah,
out of the speaker, but I don't listen to music out of the speaker.
Right.
I put on the Met game and, like, mm-hmm, prop it on the windowsill
also,
while I cook.
Just get Bluetooth headphones.
But
it's fine.
That's the thing. It's like, most people are listening to their phones with headphones in.
Or a Bluetooth speaker. There's
yeah,
just so many options that are not... the speaker in your phone.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very taken with the idea that with two devices, Samsung has basically said, oh, those arguments you all use to, like, not put headphone jacks in your phone, you're full of it. You're you're full of it.
That's so silly. It's so, the whole headphone jack thing is so silly. But can you talk about Bluetooth 5?
I have nothing that supports it. So
oh, really? Okay.
What peripherals do support it at this point?
God, I have no idea. Like, none of the ones that we have laying around.
Yeah,
so word on the street is that the cool thing is, like, hooking up two Bluetooth headphones. And, like, I don't know what kind of, like, technology bus teenager you are,
mm-hmm,
but get it, man. Get it. Like, if you and your sweetie are on the bus and you both have Bluetooth headphones, first of all, wow. And second of all, that's really romantic, and you should use it.
Is it romantic?
To just
it could
listen
be,
to the same
Chris,
thing?
It could. Well, I mean, like, you have, like, you know, you're like one bud and then the other bud, but you're not talking. You're in love. You're in love, but you're not talking on the bus.
Yeah.
That's important. But it's important to listen to the same My Chemical Romance song.
Which song?
No.
Which
no,
song?
It's not.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Welcome to the Black Parade. Done. Settled.
Done.
Oh, God.
Sold.
We need to move on from that.
I mean, is the camera good?
The camera is good. I've seen a lot of people enjoy it more than I have. Like, I have no qualms with it. Like,
sure,
it's perfectly fine. I kind of wanted a little more out of it. Like, this is very much a mild upgrade to last year's cameras, the S7 and S7 Edge. Which
so,
does that really disappoint you, though?
No,
yeah.
It does and it doesn't. Like, it is still a very good shooter. I would probably still take a Pixel over the S8s, but only by a hair and only
okay,
because of that back-end processing stuff. But... I don't know, like, Samsung has been pushing innovation as this, like, cornerstone of its thinking for so long that when you don't really innovate on some things, it just seems more prominent a misstep.
Right. Well,
so
and we've had a run of, like, everyone is like, the camera is important.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
So to be absolutely clear, very, very good camera. If you want if this is something that matters to you buying a phone, the S8 will not let you down. I just wanted a little more.
So before we kind of wrap this up, I just want to know, what exactly did you want? Because I feel like, you know, the Galaxy S7 had a great camera.
Mm-hmm.
The Pixel has a great camera. The iPhone has a great camera. So good that point-and-shoot cameras are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Except for super zooms, but yes.
But, like, at what point are you just like, no, this is as good as, like, a phone camera is going to get? Are you just like, I want to replace a DSLR with it? Like,
I don't think I could ever really replace a DSLR with a phone, but I think there's an argument to be made that we're moving into a world where displays are getting sharper and sharper with every month, that these camera companies have to keep up. And don't get me wrong, 12 megapixels is still really good, but it's not going to be good forever. So I kind of just wanted to see Samsung at least lay the groundwork for what comes next here.
Well, and now we have a kind of a variety of dual lens setups. I mean, like, there's three major kinds, right? Like, there's the telephoto kinds, right, like Apple has. There's the wide-angle kind, like LG has. And then there's the Huawei P9 or P10 setup.
The monochrome.
Yeah, with the monochrome. And Samsung decided not to kind of venture. I mean, that is, like, the hot Android thing right now. Why do you think that Samsung just decided they didn't care about that?
I think on some level it was probably an issue of space.
Okay.
But on the other, I like dual cameras in general. I use them relatively frequently. Do I need one in my day-to-day life? No.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally fine. And I think that also speaks to Samsung's sort of thinking with the camera interface, which has been really, it's very sleek, it's very...
It is good.
It gives
it
you
is
options.
Actually very good.
It's very good. It's in a lot of ways very minimal. Like when you shoot video, for example, like there are no pro controls. There's a button that you hit to record video, and like that's it. And so I think Samsung understands that most people, at least for now, just don't really care. Like it's useful, but it's not to the point where it's a make it or break it decision.
It is interesting that they've conceded the kind of like when you open up the LG camera interface, it's like, yo, welcome to the Matrix.
Exactly.
Like... Take the red pill.
Like, seriously, that focus peaking, like, my God.
Yeah.
That's crucial for a very small number of very dedicated people.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Lossless audio.
Right?
Like, oh.
But for like, mom and dad going out to buy a Galaxy S8, not even now, in, like, 9 months when it goes on sale for, like, $150 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it very much feels like a family-friendly play, right? Like,
I mean,
it's for the
masses. My dad has an S7.
There you go.
He loves it.
Is your dad a tech man?
No.
There you go.
But, I mean, like, you know, it's very interesting, I think, to... Well, actually, sorry, whatever. The back camera, I think they made the right choice. It's just a good... Like, you need to have a good camera.
Yeah.
And they have a very good one.
And then, yes. And then, like, most of the dual camera setups have some kind of weird shit going on.
Yeah.
Like, I personally could not find out how to take raw pictures on the P10. You know, like, Sony has, for the longest time, not allowed raw pictures on their... type thing, even though that's not dual camera, but still, like, there's always some kind of weird crap going on, and Samsung is like, let's just, like, stick to the cool straight and narrow.
Yeah, well, I mean, and Chris, you said that you think the best mobile phone camera currently is the Pixel, which is also a single camera setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Samsung has just decided having a second sensor back
reachy,
there's a
you know what I mean?
It's a, like, distraction.
If people want to have great, like, yeah, like,
it's a gimmick.
Your toddler is, like, running around and, like, it's, yeah, like, the fact that you had a wide-angle lens is not going to save you from the fact that, like, you launched it and you couldn't figure out which mode you're in and you didn't get the picture.
Yeah.
But I am, like, super curious about how much they've improved the front-facing camera.
Oh, it's incredible.
Is
so
it?
we're up to, well, vain as I am, I've tried it pretty extensively. So they've upped it to an 8-megapixel sensor with, I believe, is it also? It might also be an f1.7 aperture. So,
sure.
Like, pretty good in low light. It does also have that wide angle built in, so you do get a lot of, we could do it right now. We could probably get all of us in it.
I mean,
plus you have those ridiculous, like, 31 Snapchat style filters that turn us all into, like, animals.
So that's
and stuff.
I mean, that's cool, but also whack.
It's more.
I think we need a photo of the three of us as cowboys by the end of this, guys.
When you blink, your pistol shoots. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I do some stuff on YouTube. I do some vlogging stuff, and, like, the Galaxy S7 camera was actually very good in low, or I'm sorry, just in regular light,
mm-hmm.
but in low light it, like, really fell apart. And resolution wasn't really something I was hurting for. So I'm wondering, like, what I really need is, like, the video to not turn into mush when you go indoors.
Yeah.
Like, but I haven't tried it yet, so I'll let you guys know.
This is, I just took a photo of you. Like, it's pretty good. Also, you're a deer.
This is very cute. I want this. I like that.
So I wrote the lion's share of my review on Easter Sunday after hanging out with my niece, cousin. We're related somehow. Okay. She's like a cousin's kid, whatever that makes us.
Yeah.
I kidnapped a child, essentially. And we spent basically the entire afternoon just taking those photos. And she was thrilled. And her parents were thrilled. So as far as crowd pleasers go, like, it's a little dumb, and some of them are kind of bizarre, but Samsung, I think, is onto something here.
That's kids true. Will love it.
That's how they get you. It's like, you're like, oh, these Snapchat filters are so dumb. Who would put a dog face on them? And it's like...
Children.
No. Hot girls.
Can't argue with that. I actually cannot argue with that.
So you think, but then in reality, you never know.
So, bottom line, people should buy the phone.
People should buy the phone.
But it's very expensive.
It is very expensive.
But then what phone...
What's the list price?
I believe it starts at $750.
Jesus.
Outright for the S8, and it's like $850 for the S8
Plus. Yeah, it's $100 more for the 8 Plus. Yeah.
And the Pixel is...
Also pretty expensive.
Yeah, but significantly less.
I think it starts at $6. It starts the same... I don't want to be an idiot. But I'm pretty sure it starts the same level as the iPhone. But, like, that's... I think the crazy thing is that, like, Samsung actually has a very compelling argument for paying that much money.
Yeah, I think so. So, did you look up the price?
Yeah, it's $650 for the Pixel.
So, realistically, I think it's fair to say one person would decide to pay an extra $100 for a phone that looks that good.
That's fair. Are you going to go out and buy one?
No.
No.
But not for any of these reasons. The only reason I'm not going to go buy an S8 is because I take really good care of my phones. And I... don't use a case usually, and I dropped my S7 one time, and it just, like, blew out the glass. And I'm just not about that life, man. I just live too rough and tumble, I think, for objects that are as nice as this. I don't think Gorilla Glass 5 is going to do shit, frankly.
No, it's not going
to. It was pretty good on the G6. I was having dinner in Spain with, like, the early review unit.
Yeah.
And we were sort of, there's the ground floor, then you go up, like, a flight of stairs. And we were sitting at a table, like, right next to the edge of the balcony. So I have a little wine. I'm eating pasta, just like a tornado of carbs.
Yeah.
just slurping it all down real good. It was incredible. I gained, like, 12 pounds by the time the thing was done. But anyway, at some point in that whirling dervish of pasta, I guess I just, like, lost my grip on the phone, and it fell from the balcony, seriously, like, 15 feet onto the hard tile below. It was impeccable. Absolutely perfect shape.
Wait.
Not this. G6. So I have not tested the S8 to that extent.
That's very impressive.
It's really good.
That's very
impressive. I was, like, I was bummed because, A, this was review unit. Like,
no,
I'm
going
to have to give it back, and I broke it. I'm that guy. But it landed face down, and, like, the waiter sheepishly, like, walks upstairs and gives me the phone, and it's utterly impeccable.
I've been that guy. You never want to be the guy that has to email and be like, so we did break it.
we've done that before.
Well, it happens.
Oh, yeah.
Generally, it happens, though, with rugged devices that you're supposed to be trying to destroy.
Yes.
I remember so crazy. I broke the Cat S60, which was supposed to be waterproof, but it was not waterproof.
Of course that happened.
All right, guys, let's wrap this up. It is time for the wind down.
Oh, yeah.
We kind of recommend people go check things out besides our site, although they should also check out our site, including your review of the S8, which is...
Which you cut, like, 1,500 words from.
1,300.
Fine. It was a lot. So if you're reading my S8 review and just thinking, man, like, I really, really don't need this many words about a phone... Thank Terrence, because it could have been so much worse.
Yep.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm just going to go first, because mine is not a shocking recommendation at all. And I have nothing else to recommend besides the new Kendrick Lamar album, because it's literally all I've been doing for the last week, is just listening to
it's
it.
It's very good.
It's so good. So, so good. I woke up Friday morning.
It burns me out a little bit. Like, I can't stay, like, I love to listen to albums, like, front to back, and, like, you get, like, a little bit ways through that, and you're like, damn, dude.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Like, I listened to it 4 times back to back last week.
No, not that, not that I'm tired, and I'm just like, Kendrick, your life is dark and dramatic. And I'm so into it, but, like, only for 20 to 30 minutes.
I got up Friday morning, immediately put it on the stereo, and just, like, every time it ended, I went,
bloop.
I could listen to something else, or I could just listen to Kendrick again.
True. true.
At some point on Monday, I think, I went, I really need to stop listening to Kendrick, and I asked my wife what I should listen to, got distracted, came back, and I went, maybe I'll just put on old Kendrick, and just did that.
Good man.
Yeah. So, yeah. If you haven't listened to the new Kendrick Lamar, Something Is Wrong With You, go do that now.
Yeah, it's good. It's out on Apple Music, Google Play, like
Amazon.
I personally,
yeah. All of the things.
I don't know. I don't personally know if it's on Amazon, but
I'm sure it is.
But yeah,
but is it on Spotify?
The big question for me is it on vinyl? Because I think I need that.
I'm not sure. I know that the guy who said that Kendrick would release another album that last Sunday, but he didn't. So he ate vinyl. Like a literal vinyl.
Oh,
noisy. That's my recommendation. Go look at the guy who had to eat his words through vinyl on Noisy.
That is pretty great.
Yeah.
Do you want to recommend something other than that, Evan?
No.
No?
Nope.
Just go watch somebody eat their own words?
No, I mean... No, I don't.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I got. It's pretty good, though. You should definitely check it out. Also, today is 420. So I'm going to recommend that, you know, you do what you do, but then also check out all the amazing 420 content that is, like, undoubtedly clouding your feed right now. So,
yeah.
Like, go...
Clouding.
Yeah, clouding your feed
Well,
right
also
now.
To
Fogging
be...
Fogging up your social media.
To be clear, unfortunately, we are recording this on 420, but it is going up on 421.
Maybe. Well, never mind.
Yeah. Listen, so, you'll just
travel.
Do
what you do normally on 420 on 421
tomorrow anyway.
We
okay?
hope you had a good 420.
Yes, yeah.
Is where we're going. Yeah.
So just smoke weed tomorrow and then think about all the things that happened the day before.
Yeah. If you
can remember them.
Get so high you travel back in time, basically.
Yes. Now we're talking. But it's got to be like a Ashton Kutcher like butterfly effect thing,
yeah.
Where you travel back in time through your own experiences.
God,
Chris, what do you want to tell?
Got a weird one. It's not anything like what you've recommended, but okay. Might be better. So let me take you guys back to the year 1994.
Okay.
Bill Clinton was president.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's really all I remember because I was like six.
Yeah.
Like I remember school sucking because I was in second
Nirvana
grade.
Recorded Unplugged and trying to think out what else came out. What else is 1994?
I really
Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill was number one on the charts.
If probably. The Super Nintendo was out, I really wanted one.
It was out. It came out in 91.
Okay.
But interesting that you brought that up, and thank you for that, because I'm talking about Sonic 3, which also came out in 1994. And I think, undisputedly, the best song on that entire game soundtrack was Ice Cap Zone. It's such a dope track, and it turns out, I discovered this, like, last week... It's actually sampled from, like, the guy who composed the music for Sonic 3 and composed that song just used, like, an unused track from his old band
called
The Jetsons.
Yeah.
So you can go out there and find a song called Hard Times by The Jetsons, and it's basically just 80s synth rock that sounds just like that amazing track from Sonic 3, and it's incredible.
Okay.
All right. So the Jetsons.
Jetsons
Hard
with a
times.
Z.
If we're
with
okay.
a Z.
Jetsons.
If we're doing
from
this,
Arizona, somewhere in Arizona, I think.
I will recommend a compilation of Metroid-based remixes from DJ 8-Bit Mullet. This is 32 minutes long and 54 seconds, but it's actually fresh as hell. These beats are so real.
Okay, if we're talking about video game remixes, I also have to... keep talking for a second.
I like that we've just gone down this rabbit hole of video game remixes.
No, it's cool. Like, usually I listen to DJ Cutman's This Week in Chiptune, which is a nerdy admission from me, but DJ 8-Bit Mullet... First of all, I've never heard of you before, but you came out with... Also, stick to remixing. You're really good at it. It's very good.
But
please keep doing that.
Okay. One last thematically similar recommendation on our last video podcast. This dude named Too Mellow a couple years ago put out a compilation of mashups of Chrono Trigger and Jay-Z.
Oh my God.
Called Chrono Jigga.
It's so good.
It's such gold. And I want to play some for you.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you brought that up because that is, yeah, like the world needs to remember that exists because it's amazing. We just leave it on that, dude.
I think
that's amazing.
That's it.
Leave here and go listen to that on 421. I know you're still smoking, so get it.
Do it.
Can we get some like crazy lights going for our last video episode?
Some crazy what?
Lights.
I don't think we can do that, unfortunately.
Oh, you gotta ask about that stuff before.
Oh, yeah!
Well,
all right.
That's that.
Yeah.
I guess.
Thanks. Thank you for joining me, guys. Thank you for joining us out there.
Yes, I don't know which cameras.
I don't know. It doesn't really matter. So thank you for watching. Please keep listening when we move forward to our audio only format. And we still want your feedback.
It's going to be good.
It is going to be the best.
Okay. So also, don't forget to rate us 5 stars on iTunes.
Yeah.
For God's sake, you know it matters. But also, we put all of our videos on YouTube as well, so definitely check out our YouTube channel.
And give those a like and a subscribe.
Give those a like and subscribe, guys. But also, like, get on us on Facebook, get on us on Twitter. Just get out there.
Yeah.
And also, actually talk to us, because, like, I am behind all these things, and, like, I'm lonely.
Yeah.
I want friends.
Do you want them to talk to you directly and not even just to the Engadget?
It doesn't matter. However you feel like it.
So you can...
If you've got a spicy opinion about a story, let me have it.
So it's at Engadget.
Yep.
At Engadget Podcast.
That's right. It's youtube.com/Engadget.
Okay.
And Engadget everywhere else, too.
Okay. And what are you personally?
Oh, it's at Evan Rogers for me.
And you are?
I'm at Chris Velasco on every platform, including Elo, which I got a notification saying someone just followed me on Elo.
That's still a thing.
Don't make fun of Elo. Elo's actually very cool.
Well, I have a follower now.
I am at Terrence O'Brien, also on pretty much everything.
All E's, no A's, right?
Yeah.
Boom!
Pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yo, that's cool.
So, yeah, again, thank you for joining us. We will be back next week with, you know, something awesome.
Hell yeah.
You want to play us out?
Wait, yes. Shit. Wait.
Nope, it's
wait,
too late.
I got it.
It's too late.
Wait, unmute, touch bar. Shit.
I've got this.
Fuck, this computer. How does this...